Our reading is from the book The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Wohlleben. Why are trees such social beings? Why do they share food with their own species and sometimes even go so far as to nourish their competitors? The reasons are the same as for human communities. There are advantages to working together. A tree is not a forest. On its own, a tree cannot establish a consistent local climate. It is at the mercy of wind and weather. But together, many trees create an ecosystem that moderates extremes of heat and cold, stores a great deal of water, and generates a great deal of humidity. And in this protected environment, trees can live to be very old. To get to this point, the community must remain intact no matter what. If every tree were looking out only for itself, then quite a few of them would never reach old age. Regular fatalities would result in many large gaps in the tree canopy and would make it easier for storms to get inside the forest and uproot more trees. The heat of summer would reach the forest floor and dry it out. Every tree would suffer. Every tree, therefore, is valuable to the community and worth keeping around for as long as possible. And that is why even sick individuals are supported and nourished until they recover. Next time, perhaps, it will be the other way around, and the supporting tree might be the one in need of assistance. A tree can be only as strong as the forest that surrounds it.
So several years ago, we moved into the house we now live in Santa Ana. And it was one of those experiences where you're working with a realtor and you have a checklist of all the things you need. And one of the things that was not on our checklist was a great big backyard. And of course, we got a great big backyard. Now, we learned to really appreciate that great big backyard, which at the center of it was a gigantic, majestic tree that grew up into the sky and was at least twice as tall as the house itself, offering shade to the backyard. And not only that, we discovered very early on that there was an entire ecosystem happening in our backyard that was fascinating to witness. So the previous owner had put a pathway all around the perimeter of the yard, and we would look out through the windows on the back of our house, and we would see all kinds of creatures waddling around this pathway. We'd see an opossum and her babies early in the morning coming back after a night out. We'd see squirrels, of course, and raccoons and the feral cats in the neighborhood all around this tree at the center. Now, the tree itself, of course, was host to a whole variety of animals and birds. In particular, in Santa Ana, we have something called the green parrots. Has anybody heard of these? Okay, good. I'm like, we're too far north for you all to know about that. But the green parrots, I don't know what the story of origin is for these parrots, but they are the most beautiful, vivid shade of green, and they fly around in a flock in Santa Ana and land randomly in various places, and you start to know their very distinctive squawk and their color by sight. So we have all kinds of things named after these green parrots in Santa Ana. Well, they would love to come and hang out in this great big tree that we had, and we felt so privileged that the famous green parrots of Santa Ana were choosing our big tree to come and squawk in. So we really became attached to this tree and this whole family of animals that surrounded it. And it was a lovely surprise to have in this new home. Well, one morning, we're having some work done on our garage. I think they were putting on a new roof. And so there were a few workers out there. And I heard this incredibly loud crash. And I go and I look at the window, and it is just a sea of green. I can't see anything but leaves. And I go outside, and a big portion of this tree had fallen in our backyard, just missing these workers by a hair. Well, of course, I panicked and didn't know what to do. And there happened to be tree trimmers just across the street. So I got them over and I said, you know, our tree needs to be trimmed. It fell and this and that. And the guys all looked at it and they just kept shaking their heads. And they said, it's going to keep doing this. It's so big at this point that it will keep doing this and it won't be safe anymore. And so we talked for quite a while and I tried to talk them into any other scenario other than taking down the tree. And they kept telling me that that was what we needed to do. And so I made the decision that day that the tree would come down. Now, whether I made the right decision or not is probably up for debate. I know just last year, our neighbors who had the same kind of tree, it grew so big, it actually fell on the other neighbors on the other side of them and destroyed their family room. So maybe it was too big to survive. I don't know. But the point is, the tree was gone. And what we experienced was that this wonderful animal and bird community that we had outside was gone with it. No more in the mornings did we see the opossum waddling back down the path from wherever she had been the night before. The raccoons went away. The squirrels were gone. The green parrots no longer delighted us with their presence. With the tree gone, there was a silence. And with that silence came the knowledge to me that I had missed hearing something all along the way. I'd missed hearing and knowing that there was a world there, really paying attention to how it was all connected. And when I made the decision that that tree should come down, I didn't quite realize what we were giving up in that moment. But the silence afterward, told me what was gone. This moment of unexpected grief for this tree and for all that came with it reminds me that we are more deeply connected than we realize. And it makes me wonder this morning, what do we owe to that connection? What is our responsibility in the web of life? You know, we started with a chalice lighting this morning that was based on our value of interdependence. It used to be known as our seventh principle, and the wording is still very similar. It says, we honor the interdependent web of all existence. For those who've been UU for a while, those will be familiar words to you. But interdependence isn't just poetic. It's not just an idea. In our new values, it's relayed as a covenant. It's a promise. It says we belong to each other. Humans, animals, rivers, trees. Our Article 2 says we will create and nurture sustainable relationships of care and respect, mutuality, and justice. This is what we covenant as a community. So let's talk about that in connection with the idea of freedom, because we've been talking about freedom all month. And I've been wondering all week, what does it freedom mean in relationship to interdependence? How do we reconcile the idea of freedom with the idea that we're also all connected and that what we do affects one another? Some of you may know I've been visiting the immigration courthouse as an observer, along with a group of other clergy and lay people. And the thing about the courthouse is that you're not allowed to bring in any kind of device to record what's happening there. So as we're watching ICE agents abduct people, and I will call it an abduction because I think when you don't identify yourself and when you surprise people and when you carry them bodily away without a judge's orders, to me, that looks like an abduction. So we've been there in that courthouse, and I've been thinking a lot about the idea of freedom because these folks who do this work, believe that they have the freedom to do this. They believe they have the freedom to do this. I believe that anyone on American soil should have the freedom from being abducted. So the question becomes, what does it mean to think about freedom to do something and freedom from something? And I think it all comes down to the idea that freedom is also about accountability. It's about responsibility. It's about realizing that while we have certain freedoms, we are also always accountable to everything that we're connected to in this giant interdependent web. In the case of climate, our freedom to cut down forests creates the loss of others' freedom from heat, flood, displacement. Again, what we do affects others. It affects a whole system that is much larger than any one of us. So a freedom that holds is a freedom that holds us accountable. It holds life. And it holds the future. Ingrid was reading to us from Peter Wohlleben's book, The Hidden Life of Trees. And in that book, he talks about the idea that trees are actually in community with each other, that they feed each other, they help one another recover when they're sick, that they are not just individual trees, but they are part of a big, living, interconnected system. A tree by itself is not a forest. A tree alone is not a forest. On its own, a tree can't survive weather extremes, but together they create climate resilience. And of course, the metaphor for all of us is the idea that we're not just isolated individuals. We're only as strong as our communities, only as secure as our climate. Trees don't just survive together, they flourish together. And I think we do too. I think it's not just that we need each other, but that we actually can bring out the best in each other. And I think what we're seeing today is that so often we are breaking those bonds in our relationship as human beings. We're choosing separation over relationship. We're often choosing that when humanity is making choices about climate change. We're choosing that separation when we're making choices about how we're dealing with immigrants in our midst. Examples abound of where we're choosing separation over connection. So Lynn, our auction winner, wanted to remind us a few things here. The idea that native oaks, especially in urban areas, really matter, that they're essential to combating climate change. Oaks support more biodiversity than any other trees. They cool the air. It's up to 10% cooler beneath them. Trees, and of course trees are just part of nature, but they're such an important part. We're focusing on them this morning, but trees are essential to life. Essential piece of this larger puzzle. And we are supposed to be stewards taking care of this larger interdependent web. You know, the week before last, I was in Baltimore for the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, and it was really lovely to be there and have my badge representing this congregation and having people ask me about all of you. And I could say with a really genuine smile, they're a wonderful, wonderful congregation. So I encourage folks who are in the area to stop in and visit this congregation when they get a chance. But we were in downtown Baltimore. There in this historic district, you've got the USS Constitution in the harbor. You've got Edgar Allan Poe House. You have all these historic buildings. We've got the big convention center that we're at. And I had gone there by public transit. I'd arrived on the train and went to this lovely hotel. Now, the second morning I was there, I got up and I didn't really feel like a big hotel breakfast. And I thought, well, I will go out and I will get myself a banana that will sustain me until lunch. So I began walking these streets in this historic area, streets that have hotels that support a convention center, but are also primarily streets populated by a black population, people who are struggling financially. There's a long history of who lives in that area. And guess what? It was almost impossible to find. Well, it was impossible. I couldn't find a banana that morning. I couldn't find a market to go to that had fresh food to simply buy a banana. And this is what we call a food desert, right? There are these areas, and they're usually urban areas where people are struggling economically, where people may not even have easy access to transportation out of those areas. There are areas that are heavily populated. There's buildings everywhere, but there's nothing to eat, nothing fresh, nothing affordable. So I didn't get my banana that morning. I had to settle for a prepackaged processed power bar. So these areas like that are areas where we don't see nature thriving. Choices have been made so that people who live in these areas, people who are struggling in these areas, don't have fresh food. They don't have trees around them. They don't have things that we know make life better. Becomes an environmental justice issue when we look at it that way. Because these folks who live in areas that have fewer trees mean they also are dealing with higher heat, poorer air, worse health outcomes. Planting more trees and preserving the ones we have, not just an idea to save our planet, as if that's not an important enough idea, right? But it's also a justice idea. It's how we're treating one another when we're denying people nature. We cannot cut down what connects us and expect to survive. We cannot cut down what connects us and expect us, humanity, to survive. But here's the good news. The good news this morning is we are recognizing that the trees are still speaking. If we listen, we can hear the message. We go back to Zora Neale Hurston, the idea that the tree was talking to me even when I did not hear the words. Think about that. What if on our drive home, instead of just letting the trees pass by, we really pay attention? We really think about what it means, this miracle that anything is able to survive and grow and rustle in the wind. What if we really think about what we might have the privilege of being surrounded by that others aren't, and what that means, and what we can do about it? You know, listening to the trees means slowing down and noticing. It means letting their needs shape our actions. It means planting acorns that grow into mighty oaks. The poet Mary Oliver, who's kind of the unofficial poet laureate of Unitarian Universalism. In fact, back in seminary, we were told we were not allowed to quote Mary Oliver anymore because we had all been doing it way too much. But she wrote, she says, "I don't know exactly what a prayer is, but I do know how to pay attention." Paying attention to the trees and what they're telling us, that might just be our prayer this morning. So here we come back to this idea. We are in this chaotic world. We're all carrying the weight of what we hear on the news, what we're actually witnessing in person. I mean, I live in Santa Ana, as I said, and I started this by talking about big, tall trees, and then just a mile from my home, there are military vehicles blocking the streets. There's the National Guard lined up on the streets in my little town, my sleepy little town. We can't do everything to solve all of this, but we can live by our values, and we can highlight this today, the value of interdependence. And there are some things that we can do. We can stop cutting down native oaks. We can plant more of them. We can plant more trees in general. We can be like Wangari in our Time for All Ages story. I mean, look at what that person was able to do in Africa. We can also protect what's already here, what's thriving. We can make sure that we're putting things in place so that it continues to thrive. And guess what? Again, it's nothing any of us have to do alone. There are places that we can join with, people we can join with who are already doing this work. There are urban forestry programs. There are tree planting projects we can volunteer to be part of. We can advocate for policy that funds green infrastructure in marginalized communities. We can do something as simple as teaching kids the names of trees, teaching them to notice trees when we walk around the block. Simple things we can do, complicated things we can do, but the point is we need to figure out what we can do and start doing it. As I come back to that tree that I cut down in our backyard, what I do want to end with is the image that what happened wasn't forever. In that case, we planted another tree, and it took years, but the animals started to come back, and they're not as plentiful as they were, but they're back. We see there's an opossum that waddles down the path some mornings, and their feral kittens and cats are back. The raccoons have come back. The green parrots have not. They have not come back. But we've seen life start to return. And as I said, we did our part in planting another tree. So the point is that we have it in our capacity to make a difference, even though this is a huge, huge issue of concern. Anything we can do, however small, really matters. A tree can only be as strong as the forest that surrounds it. May we be worthy companions to the trees. And may we live into a freedom that holds. A freedom that holds ourselves with care. A freedom that holds our planet with care. And a freedom that is connected to accountability. Because that is where we will find our future.